President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this May the 12th on the East Coast, and then in the Central Time Zones on the West Coast, it's still May the 11th. And we'd like to welcome all those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com. Normally, I start out by giving the West Coast date, but I had the 12th on my mind. This is an anniversary of my starting music many, many years ago. And those dates sort of pop up from time to time in your consciousness. Maybe your birth date, you know, maybe the day you got married or the day you lost a loved one. Those dates come around every year and bring back memories. Nothing real special about the date other than that's when I embarked upon what my main career is, and that's music production and performance and composition. Now there are a lot of news stories floating around, and we've been trying to encapsulate a lot of that on the past shows that we did last week, and certainly last night we were talking about my Eisenhower research, and I want to alert many of the readers of the Teenage Mutant Ninja birth certificate article that many of the documents are posted within the link on the section where I name all of the congressmen and senators and bureaucrats in the Veterans Administration, the post office, and even the some of the Texas bureaucracies, like the Secretary of State. And it's interesting to look at these documents because it paints a picture. After you see over many, many years, these mindless letters that they're writing in code, Lonnie Roberts wasn't getting his mail. He's not getting his mail. We're having the postmaster take care of this. It's absolutely ridiculous. And what it was Lonnie Roberts was complaining about not getting the money, not getting the fake passports, not getting the Social Security cards, not getting the veterans cards, having some problems getting the money that he was laundering, stealing, embezzling, and basically committing fraud upon the U.S. government with the conspiratorial aid of many, many well-known politicians. Two of them became president of the United States and went by the name, one went by the name of Dwight David Eisenhower, the other one Lyndon Baines Johnson, who happened to take over when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I can tell you what I've looked at his background, he's a phony too. So you're going to be surprised if you look at these documents. It certainly bolsters the arguments that I made within the piece, and there's a ton of research there. Many of you know I spent many months working on this last piece, and just posting these articles is a tremendous amount of work, sizing them for the page, getting them cleaned up a bit because they're old documents, and I had to straighten them out so that they fit on the page properly. And you're gonna see their handwriting. You're gonna see their shallow salutations and closings to one another. And it's virtually impossible that anyone out in the listening audience would write a letter to a congressman or a senator over not getting their mail and even getting a response. These people were responding within a day of each other, and the mail was getting postmarked the next day. And it was taking a week or more for mail to move across Washington, D.C. from one department to the other. So you're going to see what they did because they're still doing it today. And it may sound like old news, but I guarantee you They are still doing it today. Only the difference is they weren't stealing trillions back then. They were stealing thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars, but now they steal billions and trillions. And they skip the smaller figures. So it has everything to do with what's going on today. Go to my website, directlightproductions.com. Just click on articles and go to Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates. And when you get about a quarter of the way down the article, you'll see the links where I list the various politicians and bureaucrats that dealt with Lonnie F. Roberts, who I determined was Eugene Eisenhower, the brother of the alleged David Dwight Eisenhower, who changed his name, they say, at West Point to Dwight David Eisenhower. His real name was Johann Adolf Eisenhower. It's all there, folks. It's all there. And it totally debunks the history book. That said, we're going to bring on tonight's guest. It's been a while since he's been on the show. He is an environmental scientist, a chemist. He's also worked with some major Fortune 500 companies, and one in particular that has been the focus of a lot of my research in the past few months, let's say in the last year for certain. And also, he is an herbalist and a musician, and he's our good friend, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
Hey, good morning, Don. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Well, you got to hear me rant a little bit. Actually, that was a public service announcement.
No rant. No, that was amazingly interesting, Don, as always. Your information, the details, just incredible work.
Well, I've told a lot of people that this is just divine providence. You know, they say, how do you come up with all this stuff? It's just a lot of digging. You know, Drew Raines likes to say, I don't just go down the rabbit hole with a little shovel and a flashlight. I take a backhoe and a crane. He's got a very descriptive.
And then some. No, yeah. It is amazing, Don. It really is. But, clearly verifying what we've known, you just extended it further, filling in some gaps with the facts that our government is totally infiltrated with foreigners, and it's really unfortunate to see it verified constantly.
Yeah, it is, but it certainly points out what we have to do.
Yeah, no question about it, Don. I mean, these are the facts, and this is the only explanation that's rational that can justify why our country is in the mess that it's in. I mean, no honest American would ever allow our country to go in this direction, to dig a hole so deep we may never climb out of it. Only foreigners and enemies would pursue such kind of goals.
Yes, and you know, these people, what's hard for the average American to understand is they think that we have some kind of axe to grind because our candidate didn't make it in. I see both political parties as two sides of the same coin. The corruption is on both sides. You know, what you have now, everybody's saying you got to vote them all out by November to save the country. You've got to vote them out. Well, it's this corrupt system that they invented that keeps them in there, okay?
Yes, Tom. Ultimately, though, it's the men in the system that are causing all the problems. So if we were able to have such a miraculous day where we sweep the house clean of these crooks and traitors and foreigners, foreign agents, and all of a sudden installed honest Americans like you, me, and everybody listening, well, I mean, that system would crash instantly that they created, that counterfeit system, which is simply communist, fascist type of system where it's feudalism, serfdom, the ruling elite, no middle class, just the serfs, the peons, the peasants. And so that system would crash immediately. If we were able to have such success as cleaning house and getting enough Americans into all these key positions again.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've made it this monstrosity of corporations through and through. And if we stop giving our energy to the corporations eventually starve and you know, become worthless.
Yes, now the corporations are simply the toy things of the bankster elite.
Yeah.
But in our government, our congressmen and senators, they're just a bunch of sellouts, traitors, and pretty much racketeers. And so if we could just remove them and install honest, real Americans, then it would be over for the banksters, the corporations, and their entire network and system. And, I mean, that's the ideal objective. Can we do it in one election? I mean, boy, that would be a miracle for sure.
Yeah.
But that is the enemy, Don. No question about it. These big corporations, you know, like IBM that you mentioned at the intro there. And
well, I didn't really mention them by name.
No, you didn't. You didn't. But as far as that's the company, if everybody's curious which Fortune 500 company is that, that was IBM. And this was IBM country. Growing up as a kid, I mean, they must have employed in this area of Hudson Valley, lower Hudson Valley, they must have employed at least 250,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, you know, Michael, in my post-9/11 research, I discovered a link to IBM Haifa, and I had talked to you about that, and you were quite surprised that existed. And that had to do with a major takeover and control, a covert control of the internet through Akamai Technologies at MIT, which is nothing more than the laboratory for the Pentagon. And
all these, yeah, Don, no question. Even IBM is kind of like a laboratory for military, as well as a sister branch to our government. These big corporations operate like the government internally.
Mm-hmm.
IBM, where I worked in semiconductor fabrication, I mean, back in those days, we were making very advanced chips, had to be pretty much radiation proof. We realized at that point, it's got to be military hardware that we're making here. And so, no question about it. It's all integrated. But, you know, my point with IBM as far as at one time, employed a lot of people in this area, and a lot of wealth was generated, honestly, because of that employment, where a middle class, an upper, a middle, and a lower middle class was able to be sustained quite well and expand to some degree until they pulled the plug and went abroad with the quote-unquote offshoring and started selling out the American people. And these big corporations all of a sudden pretty much told us to hit the road as Americans, and they were going to now take their very wealthy corporation that was built primarily by Americans all throughout the 1900s, and now they were just going to go off abroad to slave labor countries where there were no environmental controls, because semiconductor manufacturing is a heavy polluter of toxic waste.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is. And unfortunately, people aren't aware. I never noticed on all the shows, like on History Channel or Discovery or anything, where they get into showing how candy's made or how this is made. But they never show how semiconductors are made. That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe because it is so toxic and deadly. And so they go abroad to another country where there's no regulations, no environmental controls. I'm sure they trashed much of that land wherever they're operating at, as well as exploit the people who are more naive than even a lot of the Americans were that worked in manufacturing and exposed to these toxins daily.
Mm-hmm.
And many died from cancer in their 30s.
Yes.
In their 40s.
Now, I got a chat message from one of our more famous listeners, Drew Raines, and he asked the question to me, have you been in hospitals lately? There are too many foreigners working in the hospitals, and there are patients lots of foreign patients in our hospitals. This has been reported over the past 2 years or so, especially in places like Arizona and Texas, New Mexico, when Morgellons was hitting. There were a lot of illegals who were occupying beds in hospitals and filling up the waiting lines in the emergency rooms. And I had seen this even a little over a year ago when my father had a stroke, which eventually led to his passing. Even the team of doctors and interns at the hospital were made up of foreigners.
Yes.
And that was kind of interesting, having to talk to the doctors about my father's condition, and they were saying he was going to die that night, and he didn't. He lived almost another 2 months. Mm-hmm. That was an issue of our family letting go, giving him permission to go. But the next day after this massive stroke, and he actually came out of a coma, and they expected him to die, and we told him no. You know, you have your beliefs, and we have our spiritual convictions, and we know he's going to make it through the night. And I had told this to a nurse. The next day, I'm talking to, he's a nice man, he's an Indian doctor. You know, your family is very spiritual. And I said, what do you think? You know,
right?
Because they could not.
Right. Couldn't explain it.
Come to terms with the fact that my father had not just survived, but he came out of the coma.
Mm-hmm.
He became conscious. Now, he lapsed in and out of consciousness over a period of time. But the point I want to make here is that even the doctors that I came into contact with, many, you know, half of them were foreigners.
Yes. And
I want to share just a quick story with you. Some years ago, and I would say this was a good 30 years ago, I had the pleasure of meeting a man from the Philippines who made a fortune selling positions in hospitals and clinics around the United States. And there were Philippine doctors and nurses who were paying $25,000 apiece to land a job in a hospital in America. And eventually they put him in prison in the Philippines to stop him from doing this, although it was condoned in the beginning. And of course, many of these people became lab researchers as well, working for universities and clinics and the drug companies. So this was underway a long time ago. All one has to do is go to a hospital or a clinic anywhere around the country, and you will see the diversity. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that in and of itself, but it's the manner in which this is done, that people are paying a price to come into the country. And if you don't have the money to pay, in other words, if they can't extort this money from you, then they will deport you. And that was the case of talk show host Michael Herzog's family, who were deported to Scotland. And that in and of itself could be a movie. But I wanted to point this out, that not only have we been infiltrated by foreigners in high positions of the government, and then systematically robbed and plundered through their schemes, they're making money on the other side of the ocean, accepting payments to give people permission and create fictitious documentation to allow them to come into this country and take our jobs. And then the media says, oh, well, these foreigners are coming here because Americans don't want to work. No, Americans are tired of the slavery. And that's going to be somewhat of our topic tonight. Anyway, I wanted to point that out.
Well, no question about it here in this area. Clearly see that as well. And hello to Drew. You know, it's every so often in a local paper or an advertisement, they're promoting a new medical center or whatever, or a new doctor in town, new dentist, all foreigners. And again, hey, I don't personally have any kind of problem with foreigners, except why is there such a disproportionate amount of foreigners in key positions that were our American jobs. And so, sure, it coincides perfectly with the open borders, with the influx of illegals coming all over the place. I mean, they're everywhere, too. Everywhere's foreigners. Everywhere's foreigners. Obviously. And it all really started big time with the first term of the Clinton administration, where they opened the floodgates of third world countries and let them just come right in. And, of course, it's to dilute and also to displace the existing Americans, because what else can you, how else can you explain it? I mean, the history of these people, their ancestry, we're totally different. I mean, we're generally European ancestry. We have a Christian heritage. We have a country here that is unique in the whole world. And a lot of these people now, when they're coming here since the mid-90s, they're coming here to get rich, but not to really be Americans, not to become, to absorb our culture. And therefore, vulcanizing, dividing more and more and more us as Americans. And so this is clearly all by design, Don. And of course, the aspect of the slave labor, where these people as foreigners are used to working for less wages than Americans are, because they don't have middle class where they came from. And so eventually they'll get tired of it too, but it's the big corporations as the toys of the bankster cabal that have really, really undermined us after being built up by American generations for the last 100 years.
Yes, I agree. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Michael, you actually sent me an email, a piece that you had written, and you were talking to a friend of yours, basically. You were giving him an explanation of this whole issue of producers and non-producers, looking at the state of the American economy and really the world economy. There's really no difference, because this is an orchestrated, conspiratorial effort to undermine these jobs that people went to great lengths to prepare themselves for: college education, specialty schools, in the pursuit of more advanced degrees, so that they could earn a decent living. And actually, there was a walkout in a New Jersey school that actually spawned this piece that you wrote. And I thought it would be a great topic for a show for us to talk about this, and you wrote
sure
that,
does.
So I know you understand the essence of it. I don't know if you have the copy of it. I've got it.
But, yes, sir, Don. I recall this one. The guy is on my email list. He's actually a college professor down in New York, and he's definitely communist bent, which is no surprise. College professor, New York City. But he seems like a decent guy, but I, over the last year or two, sending him all the various information to open his eyes, he's very keen on knocking all this stuff Bush did in the previous administration, which was un-American and stuff, but everything with the Democrats and Barry Sotoro is always fine with these guys, and that's how it is. And so the article was pertaining to, I guess, he was trying to get sympathy generated for the New Jersey school system, where they're laying off teachers and cutting back on aid for the students. And so there was a protest by the students attempting to address this concern of theirs. So in response, once I seen that, I said, here we go again. So in response, I let him know about how our country is in the desperate situation it is, primarily because the most primary type of citizenry that you want in a country are being decimated. And so I explained to him this simple mathematical formula of how you can take the people of any country and just categorize them into two groups. One would be called producers. The other are non-producers. Now, producers are the people that go out and make something, manufacture something that somebody wants or needs and is willing to buy it, purchase it, and a profit is generated.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other type of producer, they're the primary producers, the essential producer to the future of a country. The secondary type of producer is someone that generates a service that somebody wants or needs, and so therefore somebody's willing to pay for that, and a profit is generated. And then you have the non-producers. Now, they don't do anything for a living where they fabricate or manufacture something that somebody wants or needs, nor do they provide any service that somebody wants or needs, and therefore no profits ever generated by a non-producer. And so then I explained to him that non-producers are government jobs every single time, except for in our country, the post office, which legitimately does make a profit selling stamps.
But they always seem to say that they can't meet their quota. And the reason why is because that money is embezzled.
Oh, you're talking about the post office?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's such a joke. It's such a joke. It's so mismanaged, like everything else in our government and like in all the big corporations. I could tell you such similar parallel type of stories working in IBM that are exactly like the way the government functions, or malfunctions is really the term. And but nonetheless, the post office is selling a stamp, and if they were run efficiently, of course, Americans wouldn't even have to buy a stamp because they'd be able to provide that service just based on the taxes that they collect from us alone. But nonetheless, they're working, selling something that we want and we pay for, and there's a profit generated. But all the other government jobs, school teachers, congressmen, senators, law enforcement, everybody that's employed by a government, whether it's local, state, or federal, they are technically non-producers because they are not doing anything that's generating a profit. When profits are generated, then the economy starts to go. And so the more producers that exist in a country, the higher percentage of producers there are in a country compared to non-producers, then that country's future looks bright. The economic engine is booming because you have a lot of profit being generated because there's a lot of producers making things that people want or need. And then the secondary producers providing a service that somebody wants or needs. And, of course, I am not saying that all government employees don't do anything or, you know, they're lazy and stuff. There's always some good workers in the government jobs. But the point is that no matter how hard they're working, they're not making something that somebody's buying and no profits being generated. So inversely, if your country is full of non-producers, the majority of the citizenry, the population, consists of non-producers, and a small percentage is only the producers, then your country has no future. Because the key to this is, how does the employers of the non-producers pay their employees? They don't make anything generating a profit, so where do they get the money to pay their employees? Well, they go to the producers, and they say, we're taking money from you because we have to pay our employees. And so, obviously, the more non-producers you have, the greater the taxes on the producers, crushing them, causing them to diminish in percentage and population, and then eventually you'll have hardly any producers left and a lot of non-producers, and therefore your country has no future. And that's just a simple explanation to it all.
Now, I would say this, and you understand this because you're a musician and you're a music producer, those in the arts that produce actual, tangible, physical objects that can be sold, whether it's a painting or some sort of sculpted piece. And maybe that has a use. Let's say it's a piece of pottery or a vase or a cup, a mug, or a tool. That can also be used to perform a service. In music, it would be the whole process of music production from beginning to end, the creation or the co-creation of the music, the arrangement, the orchestration, the recording, the production of the media through which that music is distributed, or as a service simultaneously. And I think the most creative jobs are the ones that people can do themselves and don't depend on a huge corporation. to exist in order to have it. That's what the barter system is basically based on. You have one person who's prolific at growing tomatoes, and another person can grow peaches or any kind of fruit that grows on a tree, or legumes and various types of grains, and or herbs, and bartering these things totally outside of this fiat monetary system that benefits only those that run it, and has no benefit to the people, because ultimately people's needs are based on their survival, food and water, good food, real food, wholesome food, nutritious food, and drinkable water. So we begin looking at what we really need to exist. We don't need all of these distractions and entertainment items that have been created for us. They serve a purpose if used in moderation or used along the lines of producing a product or being creative and fulfilling a need in the form of a service.
That's right, Don. Essentials, whether it's in agriculture or machinery or textiles or electronics, the producers are out there making something in those industries that the public need and want, that sustains civilization. And then you have today all this frivolous stuff, like you're referring to, Don, that has no real value, doesn't really help civilization exist, sustain itself. And so, right, that's the fluff, the nonsense stuff that they're substituting us with, because the real productions in all these industries have been squashed, the plug has been pulled.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they're rapidly expanding the non-producers, government employees, and therefore the tax burden will only get greater on those hard-working Americans trying to exist independently by going out, getting a real job where they're making something somebody wants or needs. And there's also competition. So you got to be good, because there's somebody else trying to do the same thing. Somebody else is trying to grow as much food as you are, or trying to make some kind of machinery that you're making, or electronics, whatever it may be. Competition's good in technologies like energy sources. That's all good. And but in the government jobs, there's no competition. And therefore, there's no incentive to work hard, all in all. And again, I'm not saying that everybody in the government doesn't work hard. But nonetheless, and let's say this, all you government employees, look around you every day when you go to work, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You see it every day, because that's how it is. And when I worked at IBM, initially, before the beginning of the offshoring, just before I quit them, and I seen all that coming, and I realized they were Nazis, and I was done with them, it was time to move on and get into the music and stuff. So I quit them after about 12 and a half years. Now, the first at least 9 years was still the heyday of IBM, where, guess what, you couldn't get fired. And so there's really no incentive when people aren't worried about getting fired, because they didn't fire. You couldn't get fired, essentially. You really couldn't. It's hard to believe. That's how it was. And it always baffled me. And but nonetheless, because of that, you could see those people that knew there was no real threat, no real need to constantly apply themselves, and therefore you seen the problems that would cause, because people no longer cared, became apathetic, they got turned off because management shafted them and stuff, which was routine, typical political stuff, and so on. But the fact that you can't get fired, there's no competition, that's what also hurts us very bad in these non-producing arenas of employment. And so this is really the core of why our country is in this deep hole, because there's no producers left. They're all being squashed. And the red tape these dirtbags in government create to continue to squash entrepreneurial activity. Because really, producers are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got a great idea, runs with it, starts making it, making money, and therefore starts to hire him, people to help him because he can't keep up with the demand. So he's seeking employment. He finds more employees, expands. That's how it all starts. That's the only way it works. And then look at all the red tape today when you're trying to be an independent, hardworking American out on your own in the private sector, working with competition all around you. Well, you know, you got to wait, make sure you got workman's comp. And then you got to have this. And then you got to have that and this and that license. And hey, next thing you know, you're so frustrated. Over the years, I've had friends that said, it ain't worth it. I'm going to fold this up, get employed by somebody else, and not have to worry about this crap. Let them worry about it and just pay me for my, you know, my time in each week.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you call it red tape, Don.
Yeah, we were brought up to, and I'm not, certainly not impugning education if it's doing what it alleges it does. but we find out the hard way, especially when it comes to history, that that education is built upon a lot of hype. It's a necessary path that one has to follow to get that certification or to get that licensing to guarantee that you're indebted to the system,
mm-hmm.
and that you're going to remain loyal to it, because then you can be manipulated. You see?
That's right.
Now, I can describe a local school district near where I live that has twice in the past 15 years publicly acknowledged that there are shortfalls in monies that are collected via bonds and levies that are voted on every year in existence, where the money is there and coming in. People are being taxed this money to fund the public schools, and they don't have the money. Where has the money gone? Well, what they don't know in the schools is that those funds that are calculated to be income are hijacked and pooled in the derivatives and the hedge funds. This is part of it. The student loans that they say, oh, we're going to make $1 billion available for students all over the country so they can get their educations and get good jobs. And when they get into the market after they have gone through 4 years of college, or in the case of medical school and pursuing a doctorate, they could spend 7 or 8 years or more at a rate of somewhere between $60,000 and $80,000 a year. Now they've got $250,000 of debt from these loans that they have to start paying back, and they'll take any job to be able to do that. That money has already been played and mm-hmm. hypothecated, and they've made trillions of dollars off of that money. And yet they're willing to rape and plunder financially, those students who have no clue how the money has been played with. Corruptly.
Absolutely.
Now, to bolster and to verify what you're saying, Michael, a perfect example of taking a producing company and ruining it is Cash for Clunkers. You have the automotive industry, say, for example, GM, taken over now. Monopolies are taboo, right, in this country. But now you've got the...
In free enterprise, that's
owning,
correct.
Yes, it's owning a company, a manufacturing company, and then giving people vast amounts of money for any junk vehicle that they turn in. Of course, what they don't tell you is they're not giving the money to the dealers. The dealers are complaining that they haven't gotten that money.
That's right.
Okay. So what are they doing? They're intentionally further depreciating the economy. Of course, they're not publicizing that. They have a corrupt media. They've taken some of that money and they've bribed the media, or they take their drug money, or they take some of their hypothecated stolen funds from Wall Street and selling phantom shares of stock, like they did the CMKM/CMKX diamond mines in Saskatchewan, Canada. And
yes, Don, and all that money manipulation, that's by those fat cats behind the scenes that have the expertise in diverting funds and reallocating and exploiting it, and at the same time making it look like it, you know, it's gone, it disappeared, it's already been spent, and so therefore we need to get another round of taxes in to recoup it.
Mm-hmm. Now they just laid off 210 teachers in this school district I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Second time where there's a shortfall of over $10 million. We're talking about in 1 year's time.
Yes, it's a lot of money.
Okay. Where did that money disappear?
I'll tell you. Don, that's the $64,000 question.
And
why aren't
these people running it in prison?
You got that right.
And the ones that stole it.
I'll tell you.
Go ahead.
You want to hear a real amazing one as well. In East Fishkill IBM, where I was employed at the time, there was well over 10,000-12,000 people on site daily. It's a little city. Now, East Fishkill, the town that they were residing in, they were getting $40 million a year from IBM in taxes. $40 million. And I would always say to everybody, where does this little dinky town put $40 million, and why are the residents of East Fishkill, all the people living in East Fishkill, why are they paying any tax money at all for property living there when they're getting their government's getting $40 million a year from IBM? Now, who the heck was ripping? Where'd that money go? To this day, Don, that is, and it's a little dinky town, all in all, on a scale of things. So, you know, it's incredible when you come across these situations and how there's no accountability, nothing, for vast sums of money. It's outrageous, incredible.
Well, how much was the state getting of that money? You know, because
that was just local to East Fishkill, right? And that's one of the incentives for, you know, the big corporations say they got to leave because they're being overtaxed. But at the same time, when you're a company pulling in, what, $20 billion a year, what's a few hundred million here or there in order to keep operating in that locale? It's nothing. And so, but, you know, with the school system done, here's the other catch, okay? The teachers get laid off. Like I told this college professor, I said, you know, right here locally, I'm cracking up as I'm reading an article in our local paper saying how top-notch chiefs get top salary. Now, that's the headline for the photograph, and it shows a superintendent of one of the local school districts attending one of their football games, and he's clapping, applauding. He's so involved, so on top of the school affairs. It was a promo shot, clearly sucking up to this corrupt system, and so I'm cracking up because this guy's making around $200,000 a year. Okay, now, I'd like to know, and as I explained to this college professor, if this guy in the public sector is worth $200,000 a year on taxpayer money, if he's worth that, then I want to see him go out into the private sector where there's real competition and see if somebody's going to hire him at $200,000 a year, and I got a lot of money that says, I bet the answer is no. You will not get hired by anybody for $200,000. So here you have the fat cats up top making a huge sum of money off the hardworking producers out there working their jobs, usually 14 hours a day on average, to make ends meet. So they're working their tail off. They get taxed. So this guy, this fat cat, now he may be a nice guy, but he's a load on the back of producers. He's pulling in $200,000 a year for what? I'd like to hang out with that guy every day for 1 week to see what he does as the school superintendent.
How many schools does he supervise?
I think it's just one high school. No, it's the Arlington School District, so he's got, I don't know, Don, maybe four schools?
Four schools.
Maybe four. I'm not quite sure. You know, could be more, too. But still, Don, we're talking about a job where there's no competition and they're not making anything that generates profit. It's a public sector thing. If anybody should be making money, it should be the grunts down at the ground level, like the teachers. And you single out the good teachers and you make sure they are getting paid for their good work.
They're always paid the least.
You bet. There's the point, you see? Now, the teachers get the hit, they get laid off, but what about the fat cat superintendents? He taking a hit on a $200,000? No. What about all the fat cat administrative people at all those upper levels, sitting on their duffs all day pushing pencils. Are they making any? Are they getting any salary hits? No, but the guys down at the ground level, they do. And then the students who are even below them, they get the brunt of it too. And there's how ridiculous it all is, and how upside down it is. And again, it's public sector. Shouldn't be getting rich off the back of hardworking taxpayers out there. If you want the job, just expect that there's no real lucrative positioning here where you're going to have an easy life for the rest of your time on that job. No, you'll have to fairly work hard, but your salary is just going to be enough to make you want to come in every day. And that's about it. And or maybe not even that good. I mean, if the producers out there working in a real job aren't even making enough where it gives them enough incentive to want to go in every day, then in the public sector, it shouldn't be that lucrative at all.
Yeah. Now, you know, we have, we could get into some real hornet's nests here. And maybe we should. You know, I think about the lottery, okay? Like in the state of Ohio, they promote it. You know, get yourself a lottery ticket, you know. Take a chance at becoming a multimillionaire overnight. But play responsibly. In other words, they want you to be responsible for how much money you put into their pockets.
That's right.
But are they accountable? And they always tell you, you know, the profits benefit the schools. How much of the profits benefit the schools? How much money are they actually taking in? And if the lottery is the answer to benefiting the schools, why are they laying off teachers?
And why are property taxes still going up?
Yes. Yes. Over and over and over. Okay.
That's exactly right, Don.
There's a scandal. And why is it that the schools are suddenly interested in vaccinating the students in the schools under the guise of these false flag operations?
Mm-hmm.
Intentional. It's designed to put the money in the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies.
And, off the taxpayer again.
And of course, their lobbyists pad the pockets of the politicians to get this legislation passed, or in many cases, it's not. They just outright lie to the people and say, well, you have to do this or your child can't go to the school. Folks, that's a blessing when they tell you that. Don't take them to the school. The schools are falling apart now. They don't have the teachers. The teachers aren't getting paid. This has been an issue for months in the state of California.
Right.
They don't have the money to pay. They're issuing IOUs. That's the value of your education. Where are your tax dollars going? The property taxes that you pay, that they say, or, you know, and the taxes that you're issued that are worked into sales tax to pay for these bond issues and levies. They always say, well, no new taxes are going to be added to this, but vote for this levy. Vote for this bond issue. And really, they're lying. What they're saying is the thing doesn't work, but we want the money anyway. Do they fix the roads with all these bond issues that they raise? We got potholes all over the country, I can tell you. Not just
absolutely
my neck of the woods. I bet you've got them in your town, too.
Oh, big time.
Okay. And you hear things, you know, in 2 years' time, people will not recognize the United States of America. Well, all you have to do is point your nose in the direction of Washington, and you can sense the stench of a pigsty coming from there.
That's right, Don. And so much.
A little to the north, and you can smell the one on Wall Street, too.
Absolutely right. No question about it. It's a high stench, too, that goes all the way up to heaven. It's so foul. And so here you have, Don, the end result when you have non-producing industries running the show. The government is all non-producing, and then you have all the tangents off the government departments and stuff, all non-productive, and they're dominant everywhere. And so, obviously, they run amok, they run afoul, it's all corrupt. But if everything was private sector, like the school system used to be, for example, prior to the 1900s, schools were all private. There was no government public school. It's private, like everything else. If you're really good at something, well, next thing you know, people are going to say, hey, can you teach my kid how to do that? Sure, send them over. Next thing you know, get so many students, you need a bigger building. And then your fame keeps growing, the buildings grow, next thing you know, it's a university. That's how it always works in private sector. The best ideas, the cream rises to the top.
Well, but if I can interject quickly.
Please do.
They know that, but you see what they do is they steal the public funds and privatize them. They privately steal those funds.
Quote, unquote, privatizing, right, Don, which is not private at all.
No, it isn't. But that's the semantics.
Sure, just like free trade. They say NAFTA's free trade, which means there is no free trade.
Well, there's nothing free, okay? So that it's a misnomer. Other than energy, you know.
Well, they monopolize. Like, you know, they say NAFTA's free trade, but there's no free trade because they monopolize and crush all competition. And so, just like when they say we're privatizing, there's no privatizing. It's not going out into the private sector. They're giving it to their relatives.
Yeah.
Or King Carlos of Spain. He owns the roads in Texas now.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's privatizing.
And many other places, too, that have converted to these auto pays on the public highways that we paid for.
Yes.
We paid for these highways. Okay.
Compliments to the U.S. taxpayer, baby.
But what they don't tell you is that, no, these interstate highways and state highways were built for the convenience and for the use of the military-industrial complex. You see, they have to have a rapid and a clear-cut way to move their tanks and their personnel carriers across the country, you see.
Yeah. Yeah, but they didn't say that when they were first building all these roads. It was
by the taxpayer
for the taxpayer.
Exactly.
That's right, Don. And now look how compliments to the U.S. taxpayer again. This Barry Sotoro clown and those traitors in Congress and Senate are contemplating bailing out the EU with U.S. taxpayer money. But we're broke. We need all the money here. People are out of work. A lot of people are roughing it because they had the rug pulled out from under their feet and they didn't see it coming.
You're going to bail out a worthless economic system with one that's more worthless? I mean,
right,
worthless
Don.
Is worth, you know.
You got that. I mean, there's an irony for you, no question about it. But at the same time, they're going to try to make us obligated to their debt, too. And obviously, meaning that the hole that we're in is going to get dug even deeper. And so... here you have it. You know, these people, these type of people are totally running amok. They're non-producers. They're totally inept at anything constructive. All they know is destructive mode.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know you say the post office is a producer, but really, I mean, it's a very incompetent producer.
No argument there at all.
Teetering, if not consumed. I mean, their hours are very limited. Okay, they're moving mail, you know, when they're not open for business. But when they're not open for business, they're non-producers.
Okay. Absolutely right, Don. But their salaries coming from the profits generated from their activity selling stamps, as far as I last knew. But no question about it, they are so mismanaged. And as always, guess what? Like, what a post office general master, they call him. He's making millions of dollars a year. And then the poor grunts, when you walk in and you see they're overworked, you know, they're understaffed, but you always know because there's no competition, they don't have any undue pressure. I swear, where I go, I think they put something in the water or in the Kool-Aid to make them even more lethargic.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
sometimes I say, if you guys go any slower, you're going to go in reverse. I mean, you know, but because there's no competition, that's how it is with them. But nonetheless, the grunts down at the bottom, you know, they're not seeing the help with so their workload is lighter, or they don't see that bump in their salary, which gives them the incentive to want to get up every morning to go back to that routine. But up top with the fat cats above, they're raking it in. And this is how it is. You know, everything gets so corrupted. But in the private sector, the corruption's very limited because if you go corrupt, that means you're going to run your business in the ground.
Yeah.
And you know, and so most people, when they start a business, they got their heart in it. and they want that business to go for themselves and for their family to inherit, you know, their kids and then their kids. And so this is the kind of situations we find ourselves in when there's non-producers running everything,
mm-hmm.
and hardly any producers left. And the real loads are the congressmen and senators. They consider themselves a special millionaires club. And it's interesting, they're all millionaires, and yet their annual salary by us is only roughly 150 to 200 grand a year. And yet they somehow become millionaires.
Well, if they were a restaurant, and I'm not even talking about fast food, I'm just talking about a sit-down restaurant, they'd be out of business just based on the speed of how they work.
You got it.
The last time I was in a post office, there were three people in line in front of me, and I waited about 35 minutes before I was taken care of, okay?
I thought we were the only ones.
When I got to the it's not a window, it's a counter, okay? When I got up to the counter, and you know, seeing this line of people, one of the employees had to go on a break, you know, so they shut down.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Register. Everybody's seen that. I'm sure everyone in the listening audience has seen it happen time and again. And
break time.
They always get a break. It doesn't matter when in the daytime.
Don, look at the clock, Don. It's break time.
It's the stress caused by moving too slowly, you see.
Yes.
now I made the suggestion to the person that was there, and, you know, it was a nice person. Hi, how are you? And how's the weather outside? That kind of small talk. And then I said, you know what would really help productivity in this place and bring some comfort to the people? Is if you played some light music in the background, you know, it would create some ambiance in here instead of the sound of people folding cardboard boxes.
Oh, yeah, they have music here. They don't give you music, huh, for your enjoyment while you're waiting for an hour?
No, they don't. And, you know, the sound of tearing tape the little change drawer.
Hitting the stamp.
And the guy said, well, what kind of music would you suggest? And I said, you know, something like a TV theme. And I said, like, na, 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 na. And he goes, what's that? And I said, well, that's the theme from The Twilight Zone. I said, either that or dum, 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 dum. And I don't know that one either. And I said, I don't suppose you would, but it's called the theme from Mission Impossible. You know?
That's right. It's impossible for you guys to move any quicker. Oh,
they wouldn't let us play either of those songs in here, the guy said. And I said, how do you know? You've never heard them before. I said, it would be very appropriate.
Jeez, I'm surprised they don't accommodate you with the music to help the time pass by while you're patiently waiting. You know, I used to suggest to them, look, why don't you set up some nice lounges for us while we're waiting for a half hour, an hour? I mean, we got the music. Where's the lounges?
Yeah. Or play some Helen Reddy, Leave Me Alone. Leave Me Alone.
And here's a real good one. There's a long line, you're in the post office, there's a long line, and then there's only two tellers usually at a counter made for four, and then somebody comes out and says, is there anybody here for pickup? No, I guess not. Nobody in this whole line wants a pickup. We're all waiting to get to the counter. Well, is there anybody here for this? And no. So, you know, she's like, she wants to help. And it's like, I say, well, why don't you take a counter space, lady? That'll help. But they, no, she won't do that. No. That ain't her job.
Yeah. Well,
pathetic.
Outside of the business that they make, creating postal money orders or, you know, the general business they do with philatelists, they're non-producers, you know. They do take in money, but as soon as they begin taking it in, it's not enough.
I'm just giving them a little slack because it's a government public sector operation, and they're the only ones, if any of them, making some kind of profit. But, yeah, no question about it. There's a lot of the activity that falls into the non-producer category for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to give you an example here, and the listening audience can relate to this. If they've seen some of the documents that I posted in this Eisenhower piece, there's an envelope that's got a 3-cent stamp on it. And it goes back to the 50s, okay? Now, 3 cents stamp got a letter from Texas to Washington, D.C. in one day.
Right.
Okay? Of course, in Washington, D.C., it takes a week to 2 weeks.
Yeah, but that's back in the days when Pony Express were doing it, and they were a lot quicker.
Yeah. Okay, now, I don't even know where the stamp is. Is it at 49 cents or 47 cents? It's ridiculous, but it's...
It's hard to keep up with it.
It's hundreds of times, or hundreds of percentage points.
That's right.
Over that, okay?
Right.
That's what I meant to say, in terms of percentage.
Yes.
You know, what they're saying is, okay, you know, to deliver this now, we have to have a 4-cent stamp. It should still get there in a day. They should still be able to get the mail there in a day. Well,
you would
think.
They're
not telling us that this was special delivery, that this was high priority because it dealt with money laundering. So the average 3-cent stamp got the mail someplace in 2 or 3 days. Okay, you can send, even today, I get mail from Europe, and I look at the postmark on it, and it was sent 2 days ago. And it made it all the way to my house in 2 days from Europe.
Under priority mail?
No, just regular mail.
Wow.
Or air mail, okay? But there's no special priority. What are they going to do, put it on the back of a mailman and ask him to swim across the ocean?
You know? Just probably, you know, the more elite couriers.
Yeah. Now, you know, I once suggested that maybe James Loeb did that, you know, because of their claims that he was born in New York. And he, you know, he made this trip, this certain expedition that he made when he didn't. It was clear he was still living in Germany. But that's another story. The point I'm making here is that they can fly the mail around the world. They can go to certain parts of the world in minutes for certain tasks. Mail's not important, okay?
Absolutely.
Sometimes you don't ever get the mail, all right? But we're talking about a conspiratorial money laundering ring that was run, and I'm using a specific example, out of Texas to Washington, D.C. and back. So you or I, if we were part of that ring, could send a letter, get it to Washington, and would be back in another day. You'd have to wait maximum 2 days to make the round trip. Okay, they can't send it one way. And so where is all this money really going? Because there's no productivity taking place. It's the salaries of the non-producers plus all the money that's being scraped off of that, okay? Because I can guarantee you all that money's not being spent on their salaries. All that money's not being spent on the infrastructure of the buildings and the utilities and the transportation.
Right, whatever the infrastructure is, right. There's no reinvesting going on into any kind of infrastructure.
All of that's factored.
Absolutely.
Okay? So we're talking, you know, and they have to federalize the post office because it's got to be done right, okay?
Yeah, the government's going to fix it, Don.
Yeah, in other words, we have to make sure that it remains a non-producer.
Absolutely right. As inefficient and ineffective as possible to frustrate the Americans even further.
Yes, but, you know, your explanation to that college professor was brilliant because it was very simple and it explains to everybody really what this is all about. You're either producing or you're not producing. And, you know, I played a clip last night on the show, and I think this would drive the point home. If I could play this again for our listening audience, do you mind if I do that, Michael?
No, of course not, Tom.
I want to play a clip of a non-producer.
Okay.
This is in the non-producer's own words.
Hello, this is Calandra, not your mother, Anna Bomber. And guess what, people? I love President Obama. Yes, I do. I love President Obama. And guess what? And guess what? I voted for him. Do you want to know why I voted for him? Do you want to know why? Do you want to know why? Because he black. He black, blacky, blacky, black. He blacky, blacky, black. Yes, I said it. I said it again. I voted for him because he was black. Yes, I did. And guess what? I'm going to get me some health care. Showed up is. Showed up. I don't know why you're looking at me. You need to be at work so you can pay for my health care. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It. Yes, I do. I'm getting health care. I ain't got no job. I love America. I love me some America. Me and my 7 children. So all 7 of my children are going to get some health care now. Showing up. Sign the bill, honey. Sign the bill. So, anywho, that's all I got to say about it. And if you don't like President Barack Obama, if you don't like him, then you is a racist. Yes, I said it. You is a racist. Uh-huh. Yeah, you are. Because you know what? President Obama is doing good by me. Uh-huh. Now, yes, I can get sick now. So y'all keep going to work. Making all that money because your taxes is helping me and my chillings. All right, over and out. Thank you. I love America.
Okay, now, Michael.
Don, was that a legit or was she just satirizing everything?
That's a parody, actually.
Good.
It's satire, okay? she's a comedian named
she was good.
Glozell, but... what is interesting is there are a lot of people that say that. You see?
Yeah, she hit home right there, boy.
She's making a political statement. Okay?
Absolutely, right on the money.
And that says it very clearly what's going on.
That's a fact. And it's very sad. It's very sad that we'll have, to some degree, a population existing in our country that thinks like that, speaks like that, behaves like that. But Don, that reminds me of the email you sent out about a month ago with that entrepreneur guy down in New Orleans that died at a young age.
Yeah,
he had so many kids on welfare that he was pulling in about 100-something grand a year off the government without.
Yeah, that article actually.
Now that's entrepreneurial activity, pal.
They called him an entrepreneur. In the headline and in the article, entrepreneur dies. He was an entrepreneur because he figured out that he could collect $1,500 a month for each of his kids. And he had...
What did I go to college for, man?
Literally, the family had to have written that, you know.
That's all you got to do, buddy. That's all you got to do. It's amazing. It's really disgusting to know such a people exist that are willing to feed off the backs of those hardworking. You know, when I quit IBM, Don, and I couldn't get into the music biz. I had a hit tune, but the singer didn't want to do a couple more because of various reasons, and so I couldn't finalize everything. And I had to fall back on paying bills, and I was really stunned. And that I had to fall back on something else. I was really hoping to get into the music again right away after quitting IBM. So anyway, never collect unemployment, Don. Never ever would I ever collect any unemployment. I'll starve and I'll keep digging ditches until I can get myself on my own feet again before I'll collect anything from anybody, because I will never be a load on the backs of anybody out there busting their butts every day to make a living for themselves and their family.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's me and God. I rely on God. And eventually, I managed in a little while, a couple years, to get things going again where I had another business going. We're doing swimming pools, which is an old trade I had since I was a kid, so I knew I could fall back on that. Took me a couple years to get my name established around. And next thing I know, was busy as all could be while I started to pursue the music again. And that's what it's all about for real hardworking Americans. They know that it's up to them to succeed. And, you know, I mean, sure enough, when things are not going good, when friends can help out and put you to work a little bit or cover you for some needs that you need, whatever it may be, just so things can... They can help you out in any way. That's what we're all about as friends and Americans and good, God-loving people. and especially Christians that really love the Lord. I mean, we go out of our way to help others. And at the same time, though, I will never take from anybody. I'll constantly work, no matter what I got to do, to make ends meet and do it on my own. And this is the kind of incentive that made this country strong and great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're missing now in a big percentage of the population out there.
Yes. Now, I have that article, and I wanted to read it because it had a nice comment with this. This was written up by a gentleman by the name of Scott Hinkle. I don't know Scott, but he was paying attention. He said, "Tragedy strikes again, another heartbreak for New Orleans. It seems like every couple of days, New Orleans loses one of its treasured entrepreneurs. These people are the hope for the city, and we must call a halt to this unfortunate trend if we ever expect to see a vibrant city again." And he references this article. This is an obituary. Larmando Flair Allen. Larmando Flair Allen, an entrepreneur, died February 7th of gunshot wounds on Martin Luther King Boulevard. He was 25. Mr. Allen was a lifelong resident of New Orleans. Survivors include his companion, Kawana Armstrong, three sons, Christian and Kawana Allen, and Larmando Allen Jr., six daughters, Deidre, Larmanchelle, Lamanche, Lamondrielle, Lamerja, and Coriel Allen, his father, Brunel Thompson, his mother, Esther Allen, his stepfather, Bruce Gordy, eight brothers, Brunel and Edgar Thompson, Will Willis, Dante, and Risha Edwards, and Matt Nell, Brunel and Lester Allen, five sisters, Chanel Craig, Lakeisha Thompson, Gwendolyn Carter, Jessica Willis, and Katina Gordy, and his grandparents, Dolores and J.C. Allen, and Anna Laura and Will Thompson. And then they give the funeral information. And then Scott goes on to say, "Entrepreneur? It took me a couple of months to get it, but imagine, he's 25 and has three sons and six daughters, nine welfare recipients collecting $1,500 each. That equals $13,500 a month. Now, add food stamps, free medical, free lunch, free school lunches, on and on and on. Now, that to me is a real entrepreneur. Do the math. That's over $156,000 a year. Anybody out there sitting on their ass making that kind of money?"
So. That's a guy that's hard working, boy. I bet he really put in a lot of hours every day.
Yes. Now, of course, we're not demeaning these folks. We're just acknowledging their entrepreneurial spirit. And
absolutely.
And quoting,
their independence.
This was a published article here, and I just wanted you to know.
It's hilarious. It's totally hilarious. Entrepreneur. Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, this is how it is when communists run our media and control our government, how they turn everything upside down. Insanity is now sane. Wrong is now right. Unnatural is now natural. And sure enough, you know, people will read that article and say, "Yeah, wow, this guy, boy, he was an entrepreneur. I got to start doing it like that too."
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's just incredible.
Well, you wonder what the circumstances of his passing was, outside of gunshot wounds, plural. They don't say if it was a drug deal or, you know, at whose...
Some business gone sour with the entrepreneurial activity there.
Entrepreneurial argument, didn't he? It happens all the time. Oh, my goodness. Well, Michael,
I'm telling you.
It's been a great show. You're going to be on Evident Footprints again tomorrow night, and we're going to get into some health issues, but I want to thank you for bringing up this topic. This is something for folks to think about.
Yes, sir, Don. Absolutely key.
Would you call Armando, or let's call him Flair, since that was his street name, do you think people would want to be a producer like Flair?
Well, I'm sure those that hung around with him really admired him, but hopefully everybody with real common sense and true integrity and character will obviously be very discerning regarding which path to go towards when you want to provide for yourself and have a living that you can, that will truly make you happy on the inside. Mm-hmm. Because knowing that you're out there making ends meet when it's tough, when odds, you know, everything's stacked against you to make it difficult to try to have your own business, to try to do something independently. You know, it really, for all those guys that are doing it, and women, guys and gals out there that are doing it and hanging in there, as difficult as it is in today's environment, they still feel that inner reward, Don, as you well know, because you're achieving something on your own. And it's only with God's grace that you're able to do it, but you're afforded that grace when you're on the right path and you have the right motivation and also the right discipline.
Yes. Well, and you may wonder how I found that so quickly, because I didn't remember the exact date. I knew it was sometime last month. Actually,
right.
Out of some 7,712 emails sitting in my mailbox that I still have to respond to, he was the only one that had the word entrepreneur in that. Isn't that amazing?
There's not many left on, right?
No, that's true. Well, maybe we should dedicate this show to Flair and hope that that entrepreneurial spirit catches on before it's all gone.
And thank you, big government, for being so generous with the hard-working tax money you rip off from all the producers out there and haphazardly give it away to all the loads. Thank you.
And you know what? There's a bit of irony in that story, too, Michael, and that's that no illegal aliens were able to get their hands on that money.
You know? As far as you know.
As far as we know. I think it may have gotten recycled back, you know.
That might have been what somebody gunshot.
That might have been his demise. They were trying to recycle that back into the street.
Some of those bullets flying might have been regarding that issue, Don.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I look forward to tomorrow night's show. Thanks for being on Evident Footprints. And
thank you,
wish you also a good night, Michael.
God bless. Good night, pal.
Okay. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. On Wind Talkers Radio Network, and on blogtalkradio.com. Special thanks to Don Newsom for the sound tonight. Also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when, again, my special guest will be Mr. Michael Anthony. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.